All eyes are going to be on Sonny Styles, Antonio Williams, and, I mean, everybody else the Commanders drafted. And then, of course, down the road, it's going to be guys that aren't just rookies, but Commanders rookie minicamps going on now. We know that there's a lot of questions around certain players that were drafted in certain positions, mainly Antonio Williams. It's amazing to me how much of just a polarizing player Antonio Williams has become with this fan base. With you, because, right, need a wide receiver, draft him in the third round. Is he going to be enough? They could have gone bigger. I mean, it's been an endless thing. For a third-round wide receiver, it's amazing how much the spotlight has been on Antonio Williams since the Commanders drafted him. Luckily, David Harrison jumps on with us now, and he's been out there, he's seen that, and he's going to be the level-headed mind that kind of helps when I lose my mind, as, of course, he does Locked On Commanders, Commanders Squad with me, WSA9 as well. I saw you write about this at WSA9.com, David, and is this now going to... We had the Patriot way. That was a thing. Now that might be something different, depending on what happens with Mike Vrabel. Is Commander Standards going to be a thing? Is Dan Quinn trying to really make this a thing?
I don't know if he's trying to make it a motto or a slogan or anything. But I think it's just a good way to illustrate just, you know, another phrase that he has is how we get down, right? And I think that's just really, it's about understanding kind of what you've gotten yourself into. And obviously, if you were drafted, you know, by this team or even signed as an undrafted free agent, there's somewhere along the line where the scouts and the decision makers all believe that you're going to fit into what that means. But, you know, it's one thing to have kind of the philosophical agreement or thought process. It's another thing to kind of walk the walk, so to speak. And I think yesterday was a good starting point for a lot of those guys.
So what stood out to you from what you've been able to see?
I mean, I think rookie camp is all about having a conversation with another reporter out there. And it's like, it's just looking like that you belong, right? Just looking like you belong on that field. You know, we've watched a lot of practices on that field, a lot of training camps on that field. Does it look like you belong there? Or do you look out of place? And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes guys are going to look out of place, and usually those are guys you don't see come back for training camp and things like that. But the good news is you always want your draft picks to look like they fit. And, you know, a guy like Sonny Styles, Antonio Williams, just really across the board, they all looked like they fit on an NFL field. And that's a great first step to take. But, I mean, Sonny, you know, not just because he was the first pick in their class, obviously, but really just for everything that he was billed to be. You know, I said this on Locked On Commanders this morning, like, It's still a small sample size. It's his very first practice. Like, so, you know, you don't want to get anything too overblown on anything, but you only have what you have. And the sample size that we have, he continues to check every block that you want him to check.
You know, there's something about Sonny Styles that just goes beyond, like, great football player. And you've obviously had a chance to be around him at least, you know, a little bit here, I know, in the short time that he's obviously been with this team. But there's this, like, face of the franchise feel to him, right? Do you get that feeling at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, quarterback, the defense, all that stuff. I mean, he's got the carry. You know, I was talking with a member of the organization yesterday, and I think I mentioned this to you before. Like, I could see this guy being a battalion commander in the United States Army if he wanted to be. You know what I mean? Like, he's got this kind of executive type of feel to him. But at the same time, you can see it in the way that he moves, and the way that he is obviously prepared for the moment, and, you know, calling out the signals and then calling out the plays and communicating with his teammates. It honestly kind of takes me back to Jaden. You know, Jaden's rookie camp, one of the first things that was really impressive about him, I think it was like the first time they lined up in sevens. It was just a 7-on-7 drill for what it's worth. I can't remember who the receiver was. It doesn't really matter. But they line up and he calls over the receiver and he's like, hey, take like two steps more, take two steps in. And, you know, the receiver moves and gets him aligned properly, snaps the ball and hits the route. And it's like, you know, day one, first practice in the NFL, and this guy's already out there, you know, kind of dictating the pace to his teammates and controlling things. And, you know, it's that kind of thing that you're looking for in this type of role. And I think Sonny has already kind of done it. But, yeah, he's got that just kind of feel to him, but he's also got the physicality to be able to do it.
You know, David, there's obviously intangibles on the field, like high football IQ and athleticism this team was certainly looking for. But, you know, when Dan Quinn talks about football character being a primary goal for this minicamp that you wrote about, and, you know, it just, I feel like you really, it's, it's always a good sign when you can see it just even from just interviews and the way players carry themselves. And again, we haven't seen every single rookie, you know, in front of the camera consistently. Yeah. Sonny Styles is all over the place. But if that's going to be your first round pick and that's the way he carries himself, and I think you said something that was key there, quarterback of the defense, Jaden Daniels and Sonny Styles seem to be very similar in terms of like mature beyond their years. And I feel like that's a really good sign because as we know in the past, culture was not a thing for this organization.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, those two guys, you know, they absolutely have kind of the makeup that you would look to and the character that you would look to be the face of the franchise moving forward, you know, and we know the face of this franchise right now, you know, obviously Jaden is one of them now, but, you know, Terry McLaurin is on that list, but he's getting, you know, a little bit older. I don't know how close to the end of his career he is. I've done a recent comparison with him and Larry Fitzgerald. And I mean, at this point in Larry Fitzgerald's age, I mean, he still played like 7-8 more years. So, I mean, Terry, you know, I think a lot of times we talk about Terry like he's on the edge of retirement, and that's not necessarily the case depending on how things go here in the next few years. But, you know, there's obviously been a big, you know, page-turning effort from this organization, from the sale to the team rebranding, to the rebranding of the team rebranding, to the new stadium, to Jaden, to the coaching staff, to Adam Peters. Like, again, there's just everybody feels it. And so, you know, eventually you have to get to kind of who's the new era of the face of the burgundy and gold. And obviously Jaden fits that bill from a charisma standpoint and all that kind of stuff. If he can stay healthy and get back to the ball that we know he can play, Sonny feels like a guy early on that can also be that next, you know, great burgundy and gold representative.
Talking to David Harrison here on The Fan and the team, you know, when you look at Antonio Williams, and again, I know he's a rookie, he's a third-round pick, there's going to be, but when we just kind of try to guess at this point, a lot of it's guessing, what his role could be, what do you see for a rookie season for Antonio Williams?
Yeah, inside out. I think that, you know, I think he's going to play most of the snaps in the slot, but I think you're going to see him play the Z, you know, outside receiver, you know, position, things like that. I think you'll see a lot of reduced sets in his outside alignment, so you know, he may not be like all the way on the perimeter as a Z receiver, maybe more, you know, lined up on the numbers, things like that. But you're still going to see him kind of get some of those reps. And, you know, when David Blau told us at WSA 9 that he wanted to get Terry McLaurin 10 reps or 10 targets a game, you know, obviously caught a lot of attention. And one of the things that I kind of ideated, and we talked about this on Commander Squad, is, you know, Terry getting into the slot more. And I think a lot of that kind of predicated, I think a lot of us were on that kind of same vibe. So that predicated the opinion that, okay, well, in the NFL draft, when Elijah Surratt or Malachi Fields or Ted Hurst was available, that maybe that's where the Commanders would go, because that's kind of the easiest way to see Terry move more into the slot, right? As you get another big, you know, you get another X receiver type of guy on the roster. So when they went Antonio Williams, and he made us all kind of step back, reset, look at this thing with new eyes. And what I've kind of looked at is we all kind of have this David Blau, Ben Johnson connection, and certainly that connection is there. And Chigakonkwo said that, you know, when he sat down with the coaching staff, they showed him clips of the Lions offense with Ben Johnson. So obviously that's going to be an influence there. But I think there's also going to be that Kevin O'Connell influence. You know, David Blau spent time working with Kevin O'Connell, and O'Connell and McVay and Shanahan and LaFleur in Green Bay and Taylor in Cincinnati. They all kind of run very similar type of operations with some wrinkles here and there. And the big thing that I've studied with those guys, looking deeper into that connection, not instead of the Ben Johnson, but in addition to the Ben Johnson connection, is how much they use their stars as those Z receivers. And, you know, you look at Ja'Marr Chase, Puka Nacua, those types of guys. Those guys are used very, very often as Z receivers. And you have complementary X receivers like T. Higgins in Cincinnati, DeMarcus Robinson in Los Angeles, Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco, for interestingly enough, who get a lot of those X receiver positions. And it's not so much that the X receiver in those systems are kind of forgotten, but more so accentuating the flexibility the Z receiver gives you without getting, you know, too football nerdy into it. Like, the X receiver can't motion as easily or as with as much versatility as the Z receiver can, because the Z receiver is automatically in the backfield, et cetera, et cetera. So these new modern offenses have found a way to really leverage that backfield receiver in the Z and the slot position. So for me, I think you can see a lot of Terry and Antonio really kind of being a little bit of mix and match, you know, slot receiver, Z receiver. I think Terry's obviously still going to get some X reps. But what really stood out to me was early on in McVay's days in Los Angeles, when he really started to kind of unfold this I call it a move Z, right? So it's a Z receiver that's going to be on the move a lot. When he really started to unfold this in Los Angeles, the X receiver that he used and the X receiver that really had a career kind of breakout season before injuries and other things really derailed him was Van Jefferson. And so now Van Jefferson is here. So when you look at, well, Terry is going to do a lot more Z and slot, and Antonio Williams is going to do some slot and some Z, who's the X then? Van Jefferson stands out as a guy who could potentially do. He's got experience in a similar size system in Los Angeles. Treylon Burks is basically the T. Higgins physical model type of player. So you have two guys already on the roster, and then you look at De'Ami Brown, and you know it's been a minute since I've seen him try to do this kind of thing in person, but if he is developed more veteran savvy as far as getting off press and doing things like that in the line of scrimmage, he certainly has the long speed to be a threat and to be a table setter. So any of those three guys, they play the X, they don't have to be the feature receiver in the offense. They can be a table setter, a contributor, and get, you know, three to four targets a game in the meantime. But that allows you to accentuate and move Terry McLaurin, and then it also allows you to open up things for Antonio Williams, and then on down to Chigakonkwo, Rashad White as a receiving back.
First off, David, you should never be concerned about getting too football nerdy with me. It's totally fine, and I know it makes you happy, and that's very important. I'm glad you brought up Van Jefferson, though, because obviously, look, there's rookies that we can look at, but we've seen very little, and I want to get to the backfield in a second, but you mentioned Van Jefferson. I mean, look, there's a lot of questions about, like, what this receiver room is going to look like. And Brandon Ayuk aside, I mean, we're just going to keep playing that game until we actually have a result there. But, you know, there are certain questions about whether or not, like, Van Jefferson will make this team or what Treylon Burks is going to look like. And I get it. We've got to go through camp and preseason. There's so much that's there. But the way you paint a picture about Van Jefferson's role specifically tells me, at least, if that is the case and that result, you know, basically everything you painted works out, that Van Jefferson should be a part of this team. That wasn't just a body for camp type of signing.
No, I think it's an underrated signing, you know, and again, health is going to be a big part of it. But I mean, the man, like if the key thing is if that is part of David Blau's plans, right? Again, it all makes sense on paper and when you lay the ingredients out on the table, but once the chef actually steps up to the stove, you never know what's going to be put together. If that is really kind of what we're looking for, I mean, yeah, Van Jefferson's got the experience doing it. You know what I mean? And you look at the group of receivers on the roster, really, he has the most experience doing it. And in some ways, he has the best experience doing it. I know that, you know, his best season is, you know, years, you know, separated from what it is now and all that stuff. But look, he's also a guy that got 51 targets with the Tennessee Titans last year, didn't record a single drop in that time frame. I know the Titans weren't necessarily a sexy team across the NFL, but this is a guy that he's proven that he can hang in the National Football League. So, you know, if you're out there ranking, you know, guys to make this roster, I don't think I would count Van Jefferson out, especially when you look at Treylon Burks and his injury history. A lot of his injuries have been attributed to an inability, if you want to put it that way. I think it's a little bit unfair to say inability, but for lack of a better term, I'll say inability to fall, right? X receivers, we know that they climb the ladder a lot. They got to go up for contested catches a lot, and they come down on the ground a lot. And a lot of Treylon Burks' injuries have come from falling on the ground and getting hurt while doing so. So if you know, I don't know if you got to go find like a fall, like go to the WWE and find a fall coach or something. You know, I don't really know how to make that better, to be honest with you. And then again, De'Ami in his career has been much more of a stretch the field, you know, vertical Z type of guy. And certainly I think there's a role there too. Like I said, Terry's still going to get X receiver roles, right? Like I think if Terry's splits were to turn to, you know, for me personally, just like kind of what I think might happen, I would love to see Terry operate 60% of the time as the Z receiver, so off the line of scrimmage, 20% of the time in the slot, and then you got that 20% of the time where he still plays the X. Well, that 20% of the time he plays the X, you still need a Z. Now, sometimes that can be Antonio Williams, but that could also be De'Ami Brown, right? So you got that stretch the field ability with De'Ami in the Z opposite there. Of course, then you got the question, okay, what about Luke and what about Jalen? And that's what these coaches are paid for and to go out there to figure out. And I think for David Blau, it's going to be a lot of fun to come in with this kind of initial idea of here's how I can see these types of things, and then just see who shows up and see who proves you right. See who says, yes, I am part of this recipe you're trying to put together. And then if a guy shows you, I should say, that he's not, I mean, believe him. You know, if a guy goes out there and shows you like he's not built to be part of your success, believe him and, you know, give an opportunity to the next guy who wants to prove that he can be a part of your success.
Well, maybe Treylon Burks needs to get into jujitsu or something. That might help him fall a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Guys do all kinds of stuff that's going to help them actually in their football career. We go back to the jokes about ballet, yeah. But it helped, or, you know, any of that. Talking to David Harrison here, the backfield for the Commanders is interesting, obviously. There is no Jeremiah Love, so we're never going to have that conversation. But you look at the way the backfield is now. You add Katron Allen in the sixth round, who, I mean, has the potential to really be a steal and fits a significant role for this team that they needed. Look, I don't expect Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, Rashad White, Katron Allen, Jeremy McNichols, and Jerome Ford all to be a part of this roster. But, you know, given the way that you've got a lot of receiving-type running backs already in that backfield, Katron Allen and his role is more of maybe a short yardage guy, more of a traditional running back. Like, how do you see him fitting in with this team in terms of, again, earning it in camp and going through that whole process? But I feel like this is somebody that could be a significant part of the running back rotation, even as a sixth-round pick.
Yeah, no, I think you can certainly see a role for him as that kind of short yardage guy or as just kind of a power guy, someone who can really kind of set the tone physically when you need to or help you drain the clock when you need to, you know. And that's where, you know, if Katron gets a lot of touches this season, you're hoping that it's in that effort to drain the clock at the end of the game because you're holding on to a lead, right? But even beyond that, I think his potential as a pass catcher is there. He will tell you that he's a better pass catcher than people give him credit for. He showed a little bit of that yesterday, I think. But really, in totality, he's the kind of guy that needs the pads. And when the pads come on, that's when he's going to have the ability to really kind of showcase what he can do. And then even better, when we get to joint practices, and, you know, none of those have been confirmed, but I would be surprised if the Commanders aren't involved in at least one, two, or, you know, heck, even three joint practice sessions this preseason. And when that happens and Katron can put the pads on and go up against somebody wearing a different logo where the coaches aren't going to get mad at you if you put too much of a shoulder into some dude's chest, I think that's where you're going to really be able to see that, that ability from him. But I would also add Robert Henry Jr., the undrafted free agent out of UTSA, into that mix. I think this is going to be a very entertaining battle to watch in this running back room when it gets to OTAs and especially training camp, because there's a lot of talent, like you pointed out, on that roster right now and in that room, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all kind of sorts out. But I certainly see a role for Katron, and I think he brings something different than honestly what a lot of those other guys bring, which gives him, you know, kind of a leg up in carving out a spot.
All right, we got the schedule coming out soon. What, next week, I think, is what they officially announced. We're going to know everything. Yeah. I know this stuff trickles out ahead of time. Do you have anything on the schedule you're predicting, anything that you expect to see, other than obviously the opponents? We know who those are all going to be. That's obvious.
Right, right. Yeah. They're going to play the Cowboys twice. I think London's going to be early. I don't know if it'll be the first international game. Obviously, the first international game is week one, but I don't know if it'll be the first London game, you know, so to speak, but I think it'll be one of the early games. So, you know, early October, probably looking at going to London. And I don't know about a prediction. I would love, you know, this team's got two West Coast trips. They got San Francisco and Arizona this year, and they've got London. So I would just love to see, and I know, you know, fans hate it, but I would love to see the schedule makers start the Commanders on the West Coast. Either get that San Francisco trip or that Arizona trip out of the way week one. And then, you know, from weeks 2 to 18, you got to worry about one more West Coast trip. And you got to worry about one London trip versus, you know, maybe starting at home and then maybe on the road to Tennessee. And then later on, you got to cram two West Coast trips and a London trip in. Just from a travel standpoint, you know, those guys have tight enough schedules as it is. And that travel is, you know, is significant. Nobody's ever going to say, well, if we didn't have to fly all the way to California, we would have won this game. But the travel is significant. So I'd like to see them get one of those trips out of the way early. If not week one, you know, week two, something like that.
All right, he's David Harrison. He's got a new Locked On Commanders that's up today about Sonny Styles and Antonio Williams. Check out Commander Squad, too. Pretty damn good show on top of that. WSA9.com. Whole bunch for David. Great stuff, man. Appreciate you coming on, buddy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
Yeah, we have got a long way to go to know what we're going to see from these rookies beyond first impressions. But then there's also still, you know, guys drafted last year, guys even drafted the year before. Some young players take a year or two to really develop, but you got to start showing now. This front office has to show that they know how to draft because there's a lot of questions there. And then this coaching staff also has to show, especially now, new coordinators on both sides of the football also got to be able to show that player development is a big part of this because that's how you have that sustained success moving forward. I'm Nick Ashew.
Hey, gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Ashew on the Fan, early 18-13 lead for the Pistons over the Cavs. They got a 2-0 series lead in that. Then you got Lakers Thunder game 3 tonight at 8:30. Just kind of feels like the Lakers might get swept in that series. I mean, you talked to Ben Strober earlier. It was like, what, a 50-40-90 split for the Lakers shooting, and then they still lose. The Thunder are just that good. Like, they are that good. And I think more people would really understand how good they were if they were the Lakers or they were, you know, a team that's not the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm not even throwing shade at Oklahoma City. What I'm saying is that organization just hasn't, I mean, they've been rebuilding for a long time from their first stint of getting to the NBA Finals. They aren't a big market, and they're not known for free agents or having stars, but they are as well-run as any organization has ever been in the history of sports. I mean, it is just that good. And I think the Lakers are in for... it's going to be a rough series. And we may be seeing the end of LeBron James in a Lakers uniform, or maybe the NBA. I think he plays another year. I think we get the final retirement tour from LeBron James, especially with what he was able to do in the first round for the Lakers, carrying them by himself at the beginning of that series against the Rockets. You just watch and go, yeah, he's still got enough left in the tank. You just manage the minutes next year. He goes back to Cleveland for one more season. Really, it makes perfect sense. Think about this. I mean, it's all playing out right in front of us. I've had this theory for years that LeBron and Bronny play in Cleveland together. I just thought it would be LeBron and Cleveland a little bit earlier, but it still works out perfectly. Cleveland loses in this series to the Pistons. They semi-blow up this roster. They retool it. LeBron goes back to Cleveland for a year. Brings Bronny with him because that's the only reason he's on the Lakers. James Harden's gone because, you know, he's been terrible in the playoffs again. And that's how it finishes. I mean, the Cavs and LeBron finishing up one more stint. There you go. And they're a playoff team, and then that's it. And then everybody celebrates LeBron everywhere he goes, and he goes to every city, and there's video tributes, and they give him a rocking chair, or they give him whatever, something funny. And it just, we all see it. The writing is on the wall with this here. But, yeah, look, this Cavs team is, they've kind of had this group together for a while. Donovan Mitchell's up for an extension soon, and they got to do some drastic things. And that's why they went after James Harden, which he just looks old and slow now and kind of looks like the guy we expect him to be in the playoffs. When he was in his peak, I mean, the dude could score. I don't care about the free throws. You average 35 a game in a season. You're a scorer no matter what. 18-15 now. Cavs down 3 there. So, yeah, we're kind of at that point now where you can kind of see how this is going to shape out. Detroit's a good team. 18-60. Oh, you're a little bit ahead of me. Well, thank you for that. I'm watching on Peacock. So, I just made that up. That's not actually the sound that it makes. I like Peacock. It's just because I got to have the setup right next to me. But I'm literally just stalling for time here. So, I think we should run over when we go to the Nats game, and I want to piss Vic off. Is that okay, Metal Chris? Can we do that? Can I make Vic mad?
We should not do that, and we should probably go to break soon.
Fine. All right. I just want to make Vic upset, but 18-16, Pistons over the Cavs. Nick Ashew on the Fan. 21-20, Cavs over the Pistons, about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter of that. Cavs trying to avoid that 0-3 hole, which no team has ever come back from in the NBA playoffs, and it's pretty much a death sentence if that's the case. Here's how you know the algorithms are strong on social media. Everything on Instagram and TikTok for me now is aliens. That you watch one UFO thing that the government releases, and now everything is conspiracy theories and UFOs and alternate realities. I can't get away from it. Metal Chris, this is how I know people go down rabbit holes, because it's a great example. It's easy. It's fed to you now. And it's, I get it. Like, I'm fascinated by all of this stuff. I really am. It got me good. It got me real good. Has this stuff mattered to you at all? Have you cared?
No, I don't. Like, I believe there's probably aliens out there somewhere in some distant galaxy. I don't really think they're
You don't think there's anything here? You don't think there's anything here
with us here?
Oh, I think there's. I think they're listening to this show right now. I think the grays and the whatever the other ones they call them. I don't remember. Maybe some lizard people.
Maybe it'll be millions of years and they're listening, you know, in a faraway planet. But
oh, yeah. Just,
you know, the radio waves go out into space forever kind of thing.
I love that idea.
But
yeah,
I don't know. They're listening in real time. But
come on, man. We got aliens under the ocean and stuff. I don't know. I've seen a lot on this. It's looking convincing. I'm just saying. I think at this point, if you're the Cavs, you might need an alien to come play basketball for you, because this team's going to probably lose this series very quickly. I mean, we might end up having five game. The East may just be five game. I mean, actually, if you really think about it, we had great first rounds for the most part, but you could have the Thunder win in five, maybe sweep the Lakers. You could have the Knicks sweep or win in five over Philly. And Detroit right now, I mean, they're down one, but now they're up one, so it's 24-23. But, I mean, they might end up winning this series in five. I mean, maybe the Cavs can make it too. But I feel like we're going to get a quick second round. And I don't know. I mean, some teams are going to stay where they are no matter whether they win or lose. I mean, Minnesota's not going to really break that thing up. They're dealing with some injuries, which doesn't really help them. I mean, Wemby's just tortured them since that game one dud from him. Cleveland might be the one team. Actually, I could argue Cleveland and Philly both. They're going to have to make some changes this offseason, because the Cavs actually have the most expensive roster in the NBA, and you can't keep losing in the second round and spend that kind of money, because organizations don't want to pay the luxury tax. You don't want to worry about the second apron. You don't want to deal with all that. And I mean, it's not like Cleveland doesn't have a talented team. They've got talent on that roster, but I mean, you watch them, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, that's two great defensive big man anchors that you have there. Jared Allen's already got 9 points in this game, but I mean, James Harden, we knew was going to be James Harden in the playoffs. That's exactly what it is. He's taken one shot in this game. The first quarter, James Harden has taken a three, and that's it. He just made a layup. So you're slightly ahead of me. Okay, now I have it. So, yeah, like, you just get to this point where you look, if you're the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell's going to be doing extension. Is he going to want to stay? Is he going to want to go somewhere else? He never wanted to be there in the first place. So I could see the Cavs breaking this thing up. I could see the Sixers doing something this offseason. Maybe Paul George gets moved. I mean, maybe Joel Embiid even gets moved to the Sixers.
You think AD could be involved in any of these?
So it's funny that you say that, because like, if you're the Wizards, there are going to be teams that are looking to move veterans, and you know, depending on where the Wizards pick in the draft, right? Like, if you get the number one overall pick and you draft AJ DeBonsa, you're probably more willing to move a couple of your other like second tier young guys that are good, but you'd be willing to part with if that's the case. If you end up falling to like fourth or fifth in this draft, if you're the Wizards, you might want to sit and kind of let them all play together and see what you got out of it. But the Anthony Davis thing is a separate issue, because Anthony Davis doesn't want to be there. So if Anthony Davis doesn't want to be there, there is value in trading Anthony Davis. I know some people think there isn't, but there is. They traded multiple first-round picks. They weren't theirs. They're late first round, but they did move those. There is value still with Anthony Davis, because there are teams that are going to look and say, yeah, we could make it work. We could get, if we get 50 games out of him, manage his minutes. You know, we know how good he is. Anthony Davis is still a 20-10 guy. I mean, he's still one of the better bigs in the NBA when he's healthy. I know he's a little bit older, but you know, what if the Nuggets really want to just make things work because they want to show that Nikola Jokic should stay there, and they trade for Anthony Davis? Or, and I mean, it's a three-way deal, and then the Wizards get, I don't know, somebody out of this mix. You get an Evan Mobley or a Jared Allen, and the Cavs are a part of it. I mean, I don't know. Anything's possible. Here's the thing about the NBA. It's not just, I mean, these three and sometimes four-team trades can be massive. They happen occasionally, and a team like the Wizards that has the ability to also absorb cap space, where they could maybe take on a big bloated contract, but also get a first-round pick in return, that's the type of trade the Wizards could be involved in this summer. But it's not going to obviously just be for another year of tanking. Like, they'll get something else in return, a veteran that's towards the end of his deal and, you know, maybe isn't going to re-sign, but they also take back a first-round pick, and then they get a guy that's under contract for a longer period of time or whatever. So I think there's going to be a lot of movement this offseason. I mean, if I'm the Wizards, don't take back Paul George. Don't take back Joel Embiid, guys that are dealing with a ton of injuries. You've already got Anthony Davis for that. I mean, the Durant thing's interesting. I mean, what are you giving up? You know, if it's Anthony Davis for Kevin Durant, I'd say do it if you're the Wizards. But anything other than that, I mean, don't give up any young guys for a guy that's in his mid to late 30s. That's a dumb move. I don't think they do that. But I think the Wizards are a team that could be involved in a lot of different trades potentially this offseason, just given where they are. They've got the assets in terms of youth, some draft picks. They got some, you know, they can absorb some salary. There's a lot of movement that could be there, but 30-27 now, Pistons over the Cavs. Yeah, this Cavs team is just, they've been stuck. Their ceiling is the second round, and sometimes this happens. Again, it's an example of, you can have all the talent in the world, on your roster, but if it doesn't come together, if there isn't chemistry, if you don't get to that next level, eventually it gets broken up. And the Knicks are showing that, like, they bought their contender, but it's working. As of now, it's working. And they went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. The Cavs haven't been able to get past this point, and that's going to be a reason why you got to break this thing up. There's no way this Cavs team looks exactly the same next year. Again, LeBron, I could see him in Cleveland. Come on, retirement tour with Bronny. They go around together. It's perfect. You think the Cavs wouldn't take this? All right, we got Nats baseball coming up next. Metal, Chris, great stuff as always. It's just, you make me want to run through a wall with all this metal. I'm not a metal guy, but you make it fun. I'll say that.
This is the Nats music. This isn't even my stuff.
I know, but still, you know, it's always, we got a theme with you. All right, 30-27, Pistons over the Cavs. Nats baseball coming up next. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.